Welcome to the Rennie Podcast, where we talk about the real estate market and the people connected by it. Our goal is to empower you to make informed decisions and provide context for the real estate world around you. We hope that with every episode, you will become a little more knowledgeable and a lot more curious.
The labor market continues to be soft. We'll talk a lot more about that. Inflation has continued to moderate. How close are we to a recession? What's the driving weakness in the job market? Why the Bank of Canada is cutting rates again?
Canadians aged 15 to 24 have their highest unemployment rate outside of COVID in a decade.
Could affordability possibly be improving?
It is. So, you know, our forecast is actually for rents to continue to decline for the next couple of years.
We could build a lot less, but we got to build them cheaper. Welcome to the Rennie Podcast. I'm Ryan Berlin, Rennie's Vice President of Intelligence and our head economist. And this guy is Ryan Wise, who is our market intelligence manager and lead analyst in our intelligence department. So this is a special semi-annual edition of the podcast where we review the latest insights that we developed as part of the Rennie Landscape report that's coming out this fall. Actually, by the time you're watching or listening to this, it will be available at landscape.rennie.com/fall25. So you can read the report before you listen to this podcast. It can be an amuse-bouche for this episode, or it can be a dessert if you want to listen to this first and then go read the report. It's up to you. In a nutshell, Wise, why don't you tell everyone what the Rennie Landscape is in case they don't know?
Yeah, hopefully you already know because we've been doing this for a while, but it's really our signature report. We do it twice a year, spring and fall. And what's different about this one from so many other reports that we produce or, you know, different publications you might see in the market is typically most real estate publications are focused on, you know, direct observable metrics happening in local real estate, sales, listings, prices, things like that. This one is all about external factors that influence local real estate. So it's kind of the bigger picture, macroeconomic stuff. It's the economy, it's interest rates, it's credit and debt, demographics, other big factors that are happening either nationally, globally, provincially, that directly impact our local real estate markets to better understand why things are happening. Why is our market a bit slower right now? And why our market is behaving the way it is, to better understand where it is today and where it might be headed. So we write it in individual sections. So you can jump in, you know, and read it front to back to front, or pick the topics that look most interesting to you. It's very digestible the way it's sort of sectioned off, and it's written for, doesn't matter if you're a developer, an advisor, a realtor, someone who works in the industry, someone who's just interested in local real estate. I think there's something for everybody there.
Super. So let's dive in. You know, looking back over the past 6 months, needless to say, very turbulent.
Very.
It's been a turbulent 5 years. But in the last 6 months, the world has really shifted in some surprising ways, some expected ways. But here within this market, for better and for worse, things have kind of stayed the course. So housing market activity has picked up a little bit, but it's still most definitely subdued. The labor market continues to be soft. We'll talk a lot more about that. Inflation has continued to moderate. Mm-hmm. It's in a pretty good place. But there are some implications for policy around interest rates based on where inflation sits today and where we think it's going, obviously. And certainly while the global economy and geopolitical dynamic is complex and still unresolved, I think there's a little less uncertainty here.
Yeah. Peak uncertainty feels like it was last spring.
Yes, in the spring. Yeah. Yes, it was maximum chaos. Yeah. So in this episode, we'll unpack all of that stuff via the report that we have produced. And there's three themes that we want to explore. So the first is tied to the Canadian economy. How close are we to a recession? What's the driving weakness in the job market? So we'll look at those things. We'll then talk about the interest rate environment, why the Bank of Canada is cutting rates again, and obviously what that means for borrowers. And we'll talk a little bit about whether Canadians can afford to take on more debt at this point. And then finally, we'll look specifically at housing. We'll talk about the wave of new rental supply that's been coming against that backdrop of a shifting immigration policy and new government initiatives that are reshaping the market for both buyers and for sellers. And I would also say for developers in the new home space. So let's dig into the data and you can tell us what's going on here.
What is going on?
So let's talk about the economy to start and the labor market. A bit of a downer This has been a drum that we've beat for, I mean, the last couple of years now. Mm-hmm. It's been a consistent theme. How would you describe the state of the current state of the Canadian economy? And can you tell our listeners and watchers whether or not we're in a recession?
So what's that meme? Not great, Bob. I think it's
what
from,
meme is that?
I think it's from Mad Men. Anyway, not great. It would be my answer. The Canadian economy, not great. So yeah, the Canadian economy is not doing great. And I think if we think back to our landscape episode from 6 months ago, we talked at length about how we hadn't seen this much labor market deterioration outside of a recession before in Canada. This time around, we looked at changing unemployment, the number of people unemployed, not unemployment rate, and how much has grown over the past 6 months. And so to get the most recent data, we look from February to August and then back 6 month periods, going back 106 month periods, because that's how long we've had the labor force survey in Canada. And if we measure the growth in unemployment,
number of unemployed people.
Yeah. So the growth in the number of unemployed people within the labor force, the last 6 months is the ninth most going back to the mid-1970s when the labor force survey started. Of the eight periods that were higher, one was last year when we had this rapid, rapid population growth and job growth that couldn't keep up. Right. So we had a whole bunch of people entering the labor force who weren't finding jobs. The other seven were pretty bad recessions. So it was 2020, 2008, early 90s, early 80s, late 70s, like all the sort of the big recessions over those periods. What's interesting about this one, currently not in a recession, although that might actually, that box might be checked off later because we know we had negative GDP growth in Q2. We now have July GDP data, which is positive, small positive. But we also have 2 months of job data for Q3, which is July and August, where we shed 100,000 jobs. We also just got, was it July or August trade data this morning? August. So as of this morning, as of recording, we just got August international trade data for Canada. So our trade deficit, imports held steady and exports declined. So that will have an impact on GDP for Q3 as well, if that continues.
Yeah, that'll be a drag on it. I mean, that'll pull it down.
One of the things we talked about in the landscape is how much volatility in our trade has impacted GDP. And so there was some tariff front running in Q1. We've talked about this in the podcast before, but essentially US businesses were loading up on imports from Canada and other countries in Q1. And then they weren't importing nearly as much in Q2 when tariffs started to kick in. And so that impacts our GDP numbers, just given the way that the US companies are dealing with their imports. It's probably starting to steady a little bit now, but we're still dealing with some tariffs and some
barriers, and some new tariffs as well on lumber and on some other finished products, house like furnishings.
Cabinetry. And that has a big impact on BC. Yeah. So far, a lot of the tariffs that have gone into effect, the sectoral ones like steel, aluminum, auto, really impact Ontario and to an extent Quebec. But lumber tariffs will be a big problem for us here in BC.
So obviously that, I guess, lack of clarity around our trading relationship with the US and the tariffs more specifically have created an air of uncertainty. And we know that businesses in Canada aren't investing in machinery and equipment the way that they had been previously,
and people
as well. But it's not all tariff driven or all, you know, trade driven, what we're seeing in the labor market, the slowdown. So we know that there's been a very perceptible rise in the number of unemployed people and the unemployment rate. What is driving that? What's beneath the surface there?
I think it's a few things. So we've had a period of poor productivity in Canada for quite a while. We've had now pretty high interest rates that have just kind of come back to neutral earlier this year. And we've also done this 180, we'll talk about it a bit more later, with immigration policy, where we're seeing a net decline in non-permanent residents. So our labor force, that has impacts on our labor force. And so one of the particularly affected groups are young people. Canadians aged 15 to 24 have their highest unemployment rate outside of COVID in a decade. But that unemployment rate is actually coming at the same time that their labor force participation is falling. And so not only are those young people in the labor force having trouble finding jobs, there's more young people just not even engaging with the labor force at all. And so the employment rate, the share of all young people working has fallen by about 3 percentage points over the last couple of years.
Yeah. From what to what? Do you have the number?
I do have those numbers. Employment rate for those aged 15 to 24 has fallen from 59.6% to 53.8%. So 6 percentage points.
Right. On a base of less than 60%. So that's like a 10% decline.
Yeah. It's pretty substantial.
How are economic conditions currently impacting consumer confidence and spending?
So consumer confidence really plummeted in the spring of this year. And obviously a big part of that was uncertainty around tariffs. So we just said, we have a little more clarity. The effective tariff rate on Canadian exports to the US is like 3%. Most of our goods are protected by our current free trade agreement, CUSMA. But it's still, all of this noise has had an impact on consumer confidence, along with, you know, a tough job market that directly affects consumer confidence as well. So it's rebounded a little bit since April, but it's still lower than it was in 2020. Still one of our lowest levels of the past decade, even though it's now risen for the last 3 or 4 months. That said, retail sales have actually held up this year. So they're up year over year through the first 8 months of the year. I believe 5% nationally.
Yeah. And so some of that could be that Canadians are traveling closer to home, staying within Canada and just spending money here to an extent that we weren't before because we were elsewhere.
Yeah. If you look at day trips by car, or car trips and air trips combined, Canadians year to date have like 5 million fewer trips through the same period last. So they're also traveling more abroad. So some of that, you know, as people canceling, you know, a sun trip to the US and going a bit further to the Caribbean or something like that. Yeah. But some of that money staying at home.
I think that's something to watch too. Retail sales, consumer spending, it's a big component of GDP. So to the extent that we care about GDP, or we want to answer the question, are we in a recession right now? Tough to say. I mean, we need a couple more months to be able to answer it until the actual data for Q3 is available. But that consumer spending softening going forward, retail spending softening, is a real possibility with the labor market, you know, evolving the way that it is, with more unemployed people and job growth that's obviously gone negative the last couple of months. So obviously the economy is still in a, I would say, precarious position. And so as we pivot to interest rates, why don't you tell us about your perspective on the Bank of Canada, their take on the economy, where rates might go, and then I'll tell you if I agree or disagree. Okay.
So the Bank of Canada, we always need to remember their sole mandate is stable, controlled inflation. So that 2% target, staying within 1% to 3% annual inflation, that is their sole mandate, unlike other countries like the US, which has a dual inflation employment mandate. Mm-hmm. The Bank of Canada, if you read their releases, if you read their monetary policy reports, they're also concerned about the state of the economy right now. And that's one of the reasons that they lowered their policy rate in September to 2.5%. They are explicitly stating they will help to support economic growth through monetary policy as long as inflation stays in check, because that's what they care most about. So I believe rates need to go lower to a point where they're expansionary. So the bank estimates their neutral range, where rates are neither expansionary nor restrictive, to be between 2.25% and 3.25% for their policy rate. They were rate smack in the middle heading into fall at 2.75. They've now lowered to 2.5. I think they need to go lower again and get into a point, get their policy rate to a point where it's expansionary.
Ah, okay. So what does that mean then for you?
So for me, that's coming to finishing this cycle at either 2% or 1.75, somewhere around there, where they get, you know, call it 2-3 more cuts, and we start to have a slightly expansionary policy rate. We also get a new federal budget in early November. The bank's going to want to see, you know, the details on that. Of course, a federal budget can be inflationary depending on how much borrowing and spending the government does. They can also support some of the stuff through fiscal policy. So, you know, they'll want to take in that information as well. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, there's a lot of moving parts right now. I generally agree with you.
Okay.
I do. So one thing I'll say is, I think there was like some resistance to the idea that the bank might cut below 225. right? The bottom end of their neutral range for whatever reason. Like if you looked at the forecasts, even up until the last cut, you didn't see too many that envisioned like sub 2% policy rate, you know, in the new year. I don't think we're going to get to sub 2% by the end of this year. I do think we're going to need to move to a situation where expansionary policy is needed. There's so many headwinds facing the economy right now. There's a lot of disinflationary inertia. When you look at population change and, you know, what is likely to be population loss this year, next year, spending that, yeah, it's up right now, but let's keep an eye on that. We don't have resolution around our trade agreement with the United States. We don't know what that's going to look like. Mm-hmm. That just carries with it a degree of uncertainty that is going to keep players, participants, market participants, whether it's an individual maybe looking to buy a home, or it's a business that maybe wants to expand its physical footprint, or in some way wants to grow or evolve, but, you know, is not making that decision to invest now because what does the landscape look like going forward?
But from an inflation perspective, we did get a little more clarity. So U.S. tariffs on Canadian exports generally raise prices in the U.S. Canadian counter tariffs on U.S. exports generally raise prices in Canada. And so by taking off most of our counter tariffs in September, that removes one of the inflationary pressures that came with this trade disagreement.
Just to sort of draw a line under this, I think that, I think there's definitely room. I think the bank's policy on its policy rate, that's how that works, is going to evolve in line with the data. So if we continue to see a labor market that is devolving the way that it has been, that trajectory doesn't change. You know, we get many more quarter point cuts before we reach bottom. So maybe that's a silver lining for the economy and for our housing market, but it also comes with a caveat that if we end up there, we probably have a lot more people who aren't working. So lower rates, I think there's very few people who would be upset by that, because we've seen rates come down over the last little while. How is that impacting debt levels? Like, are people, do we see confidence in the data? Like, households are willing to carry more debt because it's less expensive.
So households have taken on more debt this year. Canadian households, well, this is quarterly data, so we have it through Q2. They took on more debt in the first 6 months of this year than the first 6 months of last year. This is kind of seasonal, so it wasn't quite as much borrowing as the second half of last year, but you generally don't get a lot of borrowing in Q1, so that's part of the reason why. And most of it is mortgage debt, and it's probably, you know, less so this market where we didn't have much of a spring market at all. But Canadians took on substantially more mortgage debt in the first half of this year than the first half of last year, which kind of makes sense with rates being lower. People can afford to borrow more. Their purchasing power goes up with lower rates. And so we are seeing at the margin, borrowing has increased. So the first half of this year was higher than the first half of 24, the first half of 23, but not 22 when rates were still quite low. So we can see that, you know, borrowing, the amount of net new credit being taken on is pretty directly tied to where interest rates are.
For sure. You know, it's something just crossed my mind, and this is not, I'm not playing for the camera here because I don't know if we have the data, is I wonder how much of that increase in mortgage debt reflects debt consolidation and refinancing rather than simply renewing.
So there wasn't an increase in non-mortgage debt, which is where HELOCs are categorized.
There was an increase there too.
Pretty small and not as much as last year. So it's not people consolidating debt into HELOCs. So maybe into their mortgages.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Something to consider, because that will make sense on paper. If you're going to get a lower rate there than you would on, you know, unsecured loans or even on HELOCs.
Looking for a new home today? We've got the largest variety of move-in ready homes in one easy-to-use shop. Search by city, price, or size and find your forever home. All move-in ready, all new, all in one place. Start your search today at movein.rennie.com.
So bottom line, debt is increasing. And the logical, like, where one's mind goes is that, like, is that okay? Can Canadian households handle it? So what do you know?
And so the amount of debt being taken on, like, it's not the best way necessarily to measure whether or not that's healthy. And so we can look to debt service ratios, which is the share of income that Canadians are spending to service their debts, which ticked up a little bit in Q2. It's less, it kind of peaked in 2023, combination of, you know, high rates and high prices. It's come back a little bit. It's elevated historically, but not as high as it was in 2021. So the overall debt service ratio in Canada is like 14.5 0.4%. It's sort of, you know, if it keeps trending back up, it's a concern, but I think the level it's at right now with rates coming down, and we expect rates to continue to come down, as we just said, I don't think it's too much cause for concern right now. We can also look to the mortgage arrears rate, which is the share of borrowers who are 90 days or more behind on their payments. Mm-hmm. These numbers are always minuscule in Canada. So the national rate, 0.23%, which sounds really, really low, and it is. It's come up from a low of 0.14%. So it has increased a lot over the last couple of years. This 0.23% number, this is pre-pandemic, that was the record low mm-hmm. we'd ever seen
yep.
in Canada. So it's not a concern yet, but the direction of the trend is something right. to keep an eye on. So this is one we're going to be watching for the next little while to see if it increases as more of those pandemic era borrowers renew their mortgages.
So I think rightfully so, there's always a focus on the cost and debt side of the ledger. It matters a lot how much we owe or how much stuff costs and how that's changing from a broadly speaking affordability perspective. So I'm not going to go on a tangent here, but I just want to say that I think we've almost been allergic here in BC and across Canada, I think, for the past couple of decades to the idea that maybe we could be richer or wealthier, right? Because we look at these debt burdens, we look at the cost of buying a home, which largely reflects the cost of building a home when we're talking about the new home segment. And rightfully so, we're trying to control these costs. We don't want it to run away on us. That applies equally to provincial and federal government budgets. But yeah, we got to figure out a way to earn more money, because if we can earn more money, it really solves a lot of these issues, which maybe aren't huge issues yet, but could be.
The best way to do that, increase productivity.
Increase productivity. Invest in productive assets. And yeah, I mean, we need a more efficient tax system. We need dependable trade partners and relationships. There's a lot of things. We need to increase our capacity to move our natural resources across the country and to other countries. So anyway, we won't get into that anymore. So there are some things there to, not red flags, but things to keep an eye on. Let's drill down and focus more on housing and housing in this market, which is Metro Vancouver. In a nutshell, what are we seeing in the market right now? And this seems like a crazy question to ask. I know the data, so I know it's not that crazy. But could affordability possibly be improving?
It is. So wow. Great place to start. We know that interest rates dramatically increased in 2022 and peaked in 2023. Mm-hmm. Prices peaked around the spring of 2023. And so if you look at the last 3 years, so the most recent data we have is for August, benchmark prices, they're my preferred way of measuring price changes over time. So you can compare us to 3 years ago, so August 2022. If you use variable interest rates, so if let's say you had a variable rate mortgage. So if you look at variable interest rate and price changes over the last 3 years, so August 2022 to August 2025, using benchmark prices, which I think is the best way to measure prices over time. We had a large deterioration in purchasing power or affordability from August 22 to August 23. And then it kind of peeled back a little bit. It got a little bit better over the next year to 2024.
But it was still, affordability was worse in August of 24 versus 2 years earlier.
By a lot.
By a lot.
Because rates were still so much higher. So even right. though prices started to come yeah. down, rates were so much higher. Since then, prices have come down a little bit more. So, you know, not a lot. Prices are still higher today than they were pre-pandemic mm-hmm. by quite a bit. But they've come down enough. The combination of all those Bank of Canada rate cuts and a little bit of price softening. Your purchasing power using like a fixed mortgage payment is better today than it was in August of 2022, which is actually a pretty remarkable change over the last year.
I mean, that's just not something that we've seen. Like, you go back 5, 10, 20 years, we saw, generally speaking, interest rates that came down, but mm-hmm. at the same time, prices that were going up. Yeah. And the price effect was swamping the interest rate benefit. I mean, that's good news. And that says, you know, not everyone is going to look at the market today and say, oh, yeah, no, it's from an affordability perspective, you know, we've got this nut cracked. Like in Vancouver, no, we don't. Housing's still very expensive. But at the margin, there's an improvement there, which is good. And we're seeing that in the for sale space. We're also seeing it in rental, and we have been for the past 18 months or so.
Yeah. So rents really accelerated sort of post-pandemic. Rental rates really went up coming out of the pandemic as the world kind of opened back up again. And in Canada, we brought in record numbers of immigration, non-permanent residents kind of at the same time.
Who are overwhelmingly renters.
Yes.
And at the same time, just to reiterate what you said earlier, we had home prices that reached all-time highs in the spring of 22. We had interest rates that hit a generational high a year later, and that created a lock-in effect in rental as well, mm-hmm. because it was harder for people who were renting and were interested in buying in making that move at that time.
So rental rates peaked a bit later in this market than prices did, but they've now been coming off as well. And so we've seen, you know, average asking rents at for available homes in the rental space, both on the new purpose but built rental side or in the advertised space, you know, existing homes, whether they're purpose built or condos in the secondary market. We've seen those rents come off quite a bit over the last 18 months or so. And, you know, our forecast is actually for rents to continue to decline for the next couple of years as so much new supply comes on board at the same time that we have this shift in policy around temporary residents.
Right. And that, again, like looking forward, if we're looking at a for sale market that isn't robust, where we don't have a lot of upward pressure on prices, mm-hmm. you know, soft labor market aside, if we see sort of a modest increase in earnings over the next couple of years as well, if ownership is more affordable over the next couple of years against that backdrop, the demographic and supply backdrop for rental, that's sort of reinforcing there too. That segment of the market is going to be a little bit softer mm-hmm. for the next couple of years. Although I will say we do expect it to rebound, you know, starting in 2027. And, you know, to the extent that we see continued population growth from that point going forward. And we're going to see a bit, you know, reduction in the construction pipeline as product gets completed and we see fewer starts. The rental market is going to tighten up again. Mm-hmm. And all of that kind of reflects, I mean, there's some implicit policy impacts folded into all of these dynamics from past years. But from where we are now, looking back over the past few months and looking ahead, are there any, and we're talking about government policy, are there any changes to policy that could impact housing construction, mm-hmm. so giving us more or less, and the ownership side of the market as well?
Yeah, so at the federal level, I think there's a couple we need to keep our eye on. The first is this Build Canada Homes program.
Great name.
Still it's fairly like
homes for people.
Yeah, homes for a country.
Comes up with this stuff.
We're still pretty light on details. I think they made one announcement. They're going to do some projects in some other provinces, nothing in BC. So the federal government will be a financial partner. They'll bring in private developers as well. They want to use a combination of federal land, similar to BC Builds mm-hmm. in that respect. They also want to focus on modular construction, mass timber, ways of being more productive in construction space, which I think is interesting. And there's potentially some gains to be made there.
There are. And I'll just jump in.
Sure.
I'm going to interrupt your train of thought. I'm sorry. But talking to developers, people within the industry, like, I mean, as it stands right now, this initial foray by Build Canada Homes is fairly limited in scope overall, but also I think pursuing modular offsite prefab construction makes sense on paper. It's interesting talking to a number of developers, I would say more traditional, like on-site builders mm-hmm. there. And I don't think this isn't coming from a place of, hey, this is a threat. It's, yeah, where the technology is right now. And, you know, the fact that you need a consistent pipeline of customers for this product, and you have to be able to locate it fairly close. From what I understand, you've got to be within about a day's commute mm-hmm. to the site.
Between the site and your huge pieces of material.
Huge,
right?
Huge. It's a lot to be moving around. So yeah. There's still some barriers to this approach being fully sort of adopted and integrated to the point where it's materially increasing supply. But we got to explore it.
Yeah. And, you know, we have challenges with skilled labor and construction as our construction labor force, like our labor force, is aging into retirement. Mm-hmm. And we don't have the same pipeline of people that we need in order to meet demand. So there is a huge constraint there with labor. The Build Canada Homes program, the new federal government, has a target of increasing housing starts, all housing starts nationally, to 500,000 a year, which is, you know, I think a theoretical impossibility with our current construction labor force. Even if we make some of these productivity gains from modular, offsite, mass timber, any of that stuff, that like this target is beyond anything that I think is achievable. So I think there's some good initiatives here, but ultimately I think 500,000 housing starts is unachievable. We have not hit 250,000.
It's frankly quite absurd.
Yeah.
As so, a policy goal.
But we also probably don't need that many. Like we are as big of advocates in this room as anywhere for increasing housing construction. You know, we think we need to build far more homes than we're currently building to have an adequate supply of homes. And even then, I don't think 500,000 a year is necessarily where we need to go.
We could build a lot less, but we got to build them cheaper to meet the market where it's at. Developers are price takers, right? Like they don't set the price that the market pays, especially in a new home market like Vancouver, where it's the landscape of development is very fragmented. You don't have players that take up a sizable share that can, you know, can really influence prices. So it's the bottom up cost to build that is really problematic now. And I think like we gotta get that under control.
Agreed.
And that on its own will help expand supply, maybe not to 500,000 a year in Canada. Anything else you want to add?
Yeah, one more policy. It's getting less attention, but I think it's noteworthy, is the changes to the MLI Select program, which is a CMHC program. Essentially, it's a way to give mortgage financing for new purpose-built rental construction.
It's insurance.
Yeah. So it is not that different from like if you want to get mortgage insurance on your home through CMHC, but this is for construction of a new apartment building. There is a whole bunch of criteria to meet in order to get this insurance, but then it allows you to get a lower rate because you have an insured mortgage and it offers longer amortization periods.
Yeah. And the ability to carry a higher loan to value ratio.
It offers a lot more flexibility to a purpose-built rental developer, and it's been hugely successful in terms of how much uptake it's had. So in 2024, there was 179,000 homes insured under this program, which at various stages of construction.
Right. Yeah.
But like we just said, you know, we have fewer than 250,000 total housing starts. And this is, you know, these are apartment rentals that are being brought to market this way. So the changes to the program, they've tightened up some of the requirements. There's more criteria to meet for like ESG goals. So whether it's building code, accessibility, environmental, there's some additional a point system criteria to hit. Overall, I think it will make it harder for developers to get their MLI Select mortgage insurance, so fewer will get it. And I think overall, the tightening up of this criteria means less new rental construction coming to market than there otherwise would have been.
That's how you do it. You have a policy that works so well that everyone's using it, so you have to pull it back. You got to make it tougher.
Tighten it up.
Well, great. Lots of really good perspectives on the economy and the market from you. You being the primary author of the fall 2025 Rennie Landscape. So this is a lot of fun to do. I guess big takeaways, the economy is softening. The labor market could be in better shape. But on the positive side of things, inflation has been, you know, below 2% for how many months?
I believe we're up to 5 months below 2%.
Below 2%.
And more than 20 at below 3%. So within the range.
Yeah, which is great. So this is, we haven't been in this kind of scenario since pre-COVID as it relates to inflation. We've got interest rates coming down. We have in this market housing that is a little bit more affordable than it has been. Actually, a lot more affordable than it was over the past couple of years, but even more affordable than it was going back as far as 3 years. We also, and we didn't talk about it here, but you know, on the housing front, there's still a, I would say, a record high in homes that are available for purchase, both in resale and in the pre-sale slash newly built home segment. So buyers have choice that they haven't experienced in.
And a lot of those homes are completed. So for a lot of buyers, it's a little easier to buy a new home when it's actually built and ready to go versus, you know, the pre-sale space where you might need to wait a while to get your home delivered.
Absolutely. Awesome. Well, thanks, Ryan, for doing this.
Thank you.
A lot of fun as always. If you're watching or you're listening, thanks for doing so. We really appreciate it. If you'd like to read the latest edition of the Rennie Landscape, it is at landscape.rennie.com. And we look forward to doing this again in 6 months.
Thank you for joining us on the Rennie Podcast. If you'd like to learn more or to subscribe to intelligence updates, Go to renny.com/intelligence.